It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Last year, hundreds of kids around the United States suffered from lead poisoning after eating cinnamon applesauce that was tainted with dangerous levels of lead. Food safety advocates say this shows a major gap in the Food and Drug Administration's authority to effectively oversee food safety. The U.S. government estimates that there are about 48 million cases of foodborne illness annually. Our next guest has spent the last 30 years advocating for greater protections in the food safety system. He joins us now for a look at some of the recent recalls and outbreaks and how they fit into the bigger picture of food safety. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or your kids ever gotten sick from something you ate? Did that product end up getting recalled? How do you keep track of what foods have been recalled? Do you not know how to find out? Do you have questions about our food safety system in the country? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Bill Marler is a personal injury lawyer and longtime food safety advocate. He's the managing partner of Marler Clark, a law firm based in Seattle that specializes in foodborne illness cases. He was featured in the recent Netflix documentary Poisoned, The Dirty Truth About Your Food. Bill, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hello.
Before we get into wider concerns about the food safety system, let's zoom in on this story of lead in cinnamon applesauce marketed to kids. How did it find its way into the system? Why wasn't it detected before it was already affecting kids?
So it's pretty clear that, and I think the FDA is correct, that there was intentional contamination, likely added lead powder at some point in the chain of distribution to increase the weight of the cinnamon. Now, that sounds, I know, just crazy, but intentional adulteration occurs like that, unfortunately, too frequently. There was an outbreak of melamine, which is a plastic substitute in dog food and cat food, about 15 years ago, that sickened thousands and thousands of pets across the United States. And melamine was added to the mixture because it faked protein. And so when you chemically tested melamine, it registered as protein. So they were, in a sense, juicing the cat and dog food, but it was causing kidney failure in animals. So these things do happen. And they really are a failure of, you know, this chain of distribution that may stretch across the world. There are difficult points when the FDA doesn't have control over what goes in to a food product. They rely on, you know, importers primarily and exporters to do the right thing. But the melamine in the dog food and the lead in the cinnamon, you know, escape that scrutiny.
Yeah, both those cases are, as you mentioned, part of the international food distribution system. In the case of the cinnamon, I believe it came from South Asia via applesauce products in Central or South America. The assumption, right, I think a lot of consumers might have is no big deal. The FDA or somebody is testing or at least sampling this stuff as it gets imported to make sure it meets our standards. What actually happens?
Well, you know, in the lead in the cinnamon, there likely was, you know, we don't know for sure yet. That's going to be figured out in the litigation. But they'll, you know, my strong suspicion is that there was a failure to test or falsification of testing at, you know, the point where most importers require what's called certificates of analysis, so some testing. It's likely that somebody either didn't test or they faked the test results. And that's how the lead made it through the system into the cinnamon and then into the applesauce. But, you know, as we chase cheaper and cheaper products around the world, making these products less, you know, less costly to people, but the risks of extending a supply chain around the world means there's potential for, you know, gaps, especially if it's intentional.
And this applesauce, as I mentioned, we didn't find out about it until, in this case, actually, it was two parents in North Carolina. They were worried about their kids' blood lead levels after routine screening. How often is this the case that whether we're talking about a mineral adulterant like lead versus a foodborne illness like E. coli, how common is it that we don't find out about the contamination until it's already affecting people?
Yeah, that's a super point. Our system is really set up that it's the canary in the coal mine scenario. You know, whether it be lead in cinnamon that gets into applesauce, or, you know, bacteria in infant formula, E. coli in hamburger or romaine lettuce. The way the system operates now is that it's usually when people get sick that we notice. You know, lead took a longer time because it's not a what you'd normally expect to find in a child's type product. But E. coli cases, salmonella cases, listeria cases, the ones you hear about, what happens is once somebody consumes a product and gets sick, they go to the hospital, they test positive for the product. That's when health authorities are notified, and that's when they start to do their investigation. So in many respects, the horse is already out of the barn making people sick. They do jump on those cases fairly rapidly and fairly quickly with the idea of trying to figure out what is the common food item and then to get that product off the shelf as fast as possible. But in most of these instances, by the time the illnesses are being counted, the outbreak is either coming to an end or already over.
Bill Marler is with us, personal injury lawyer, longtime food safety advocate, looking at the American food safety system after one of the most recent incidents, lead contaminating cinnamon found in applesauce and other products. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your experiences as a consumer, if you've had a foodborne illness yourself, or if you're in the food production system, do you see ways to make it safer? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Chris is with us in Eau Claire. Chris, hi.
Hi. So I have heard some suggest that perhaps separating the food part of the FDA from the drug part of the FDA to make the food safety program more robust and to give the program more bite when it says that something needs to be done. Does this sound like a reasonable assertion? And if so, what can we do moving forward to help the FDA do a better job?
Chris, thanks for the call. Bill, what do you think?
Brilliant idea. And it's actually been one that I've advocated for over 30 years. There have been multiple times where Congress has sort of stepped into that to try to figure out whether or not we can create a food safety system that really sort of deals not only with bacterial and viral contaminations, but also human nutrition. The way the food system was set up, where the USDA, which has an arm called Food Safety Inspection Service that oversees essentially red meat, chicken, pork, and poultry. That's what they oversee. And they also oversee catfish. The FDA does all other fish and everything else in the food supply, so about 80%. The problem that the FDA has is that their bulk of their resources go to, you know, overseeing drugs and medical devices, which is a good thing because we want to make sure those are safe. But the food side of the equation at FDA, you know, does take, you know, the back seat. Some people call it the red-haired stepchild of the food system, and it's really true. You know, I think most people who would be building a food system, and the way you see systems built in the EU, is that there's a food safety agency that has all the pieces. It has meat, it has poultry, it has, you know, consumer goods, all of that's involved with human nutrition, and it's overseen in a robust way. We're pretty disjointed here in the United States, and it's not the best system that allows for, you know, a real close look at our food system.
Chris, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Bill Marler, food safety advocate, managing partner of Marler Clark, a law firm that specializes in foodborne illness cases. He's with us for a look at the food safety system and what happens when contaminated food makes its way into grocery stores and on into our pantries. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you, by and large, trust the safety of the U.S. food system? Do you have concerns? How often do you think food should be tested for things like toxins and pathogens? What questions do you have about foodborne illness and the food safety system? Do you work in food production, maybe here in Wisconsin? Love to hear your perspective as well. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with longtime food safety advocate and legal expert Bill Marler about the recent lead poisoning outbreak from contaminated cinnamon applesauce and ways to improve the food safety system. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction when you hear about food recalls or this lead contamination or outbreaks of E. coli or salmonella in the news? Has one of these ever affected you? I got salmonella once, never sure where it came from. Wasn't fun. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bill, related to what I just said there, I once had salmonella. I have my suspects, but I never found out where it came from. How often do you think it is that there might be some contaminated food that it doesn't end up being enough of an outbreak to show up on the radar?
There is a great statistic that the CDC puts out that for every one person who's counted in a salmonella outbreak, and counted means that they got sick and they sought medical attention and there's a culture that's positive for salmonella. For every one person counted, there's 38.5 other people who don't get counted. So most of the time when you hear about a foodborne illness outbreak linked to a particular product or a restaurant, you're really just seeing the tip of the iceberg of the people who are sick. 1.3 to 1.4 million Americans get salmonella every year, but it's just really a handful of those that are testing positive. And so the system is really not really well designed to catch these outbreaks before they cause illness. I've been a big advocate of being much more proactive. So to really require importers, manufacturers, have a food safety culture that also involves, high grade technology to eliminate pathogens and also, random testing. E. coli 0157 used to be called the hamburger disease. 25, 30 years ago, that was all I did. But a combination of, in regulation from the government, intervention from, manufacturers, increased cook times at restaurants, it's essentially eliminated E. coli from hamburger. Doesn't mean that people should go out and eat raw hamburger or what you call in Wisconsin tiger meat. I would not advocate for that. But hamburger is much safer in 2024 than it was in 1994.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. Your guest mentioned about 15 years ago, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, melamine in dog food. Actually, at that time, I lived in the state of Oregon, and the big issue there, I thought it was nationally, was that that chemical was also added to baby formula. And that was a big issue. Also, and they were the baby formulas that came from China. Also, there were some pasta products. I recall one that I had. It was organic, but no one could tell if it had melamine in it or not.
Tom, thanks for the call. Bill, I know that was a story you were following at the time.
Yeah, no, the infant formula one primarily impacted children in China. In fact, I was in China speaking in Beijing at a food safety conference when that story broke and was asked not to speak about it, which was probably the wrong thing for somebody to ask me to do. So I spoke about it anyway. And then as I was leaving Beijing in the airport, I got pulled aside, had a little discussion with some Chinese officials, but I did make my plane.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Marcus joins us now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hey, Rob. So I think there's a real opportunity for all of us, just given everything that's going on with the climate, to perhaps shorten up the chain of custody for some of our food and start looking to grow perhaps, you know, strawberries, raspberries, whatever, tomatoes in the backyard. And so that way it's, you know, readily available and we're able to check, you know, the cleanliness of it as it makes it to our table. And just for what it's worth, I had cryptosporidium from water back in Milwaukee in the 80s.
Ooh, yeah, that was a huge, huge outbreak, Marcus.
That was a huge outbreak. Thanks. Hundreds of thousands of people sick. Yeah, that was a mess.
Marcus, thanks a lot for that call. Bill, Marcus's idea, not everybody's going to be able to grow all their own food, but his idea of shortening the food chain so we have a shorter chain of custody to track. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to blame imported food products for all our, you know, woes because, you know, products that, you know, get grown in California get shipped around the country and they cause outbreaks. There was a spinach outbreak in 2006. The spinach went all over the United States, but most of the illnesses were in Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin because that product was manufactured in California. It was chopped, triple washed, bagged, and shipped across the country. It went to California too, but there were hardly any illnesses, very few illnesses on the West Coast. But having that product shipped across the country, it takes a couple of days. That bacteria perks in that bag and, you know, creates enough E. coli to make people quite ill. So I think there's a pretty good reason to try to shrink these supply chains, you know, to make it so, you know, you're eating products that are fresher, that don't have a chance for that bacteria to manifest itself and to grow to an infectious level that'll make someone sick.
Marcus, thanks for that call. We're talking to Bill Marler, longtime food safety advocate, about the American food safety system. Bill, staying with the contaminated greens, talk about the systemic problems that might be there, the way the greens are grown, exposed to ultimately manure from livestock, and that gap in regulations that might make it harder for the food safety system to catch that.
Yeah, the FDA has been frustratingly slow at really dealing with environmental contamination. And a lot of it has to do with even some of the earlier discussions we were having about having this sort of disjointed food supply where you have USDA paying attention to this and FDA paying attention to that. I mean, I think it'll shock your listeners to understand that when there is an outbreak of E. coli linked to leafy greens, like the 2018 outbreak that sickened 240 people in the U.S. and many in Canada as well, it was linked to romaine grown in Yuma. It was, you know, close to a cattle feedlot, close to a water supply that went past the cattle feedlot. There's no question that the outbreak stemmed from there, but because of the disjointed, you know, who's responsible, you know, FDA was not allowed to go onto that cattle feedlot to do testing to see, to confirm what I think, frankly, is evident that that was the source of the E. coli. So if you don't test, you don't know, you can't do anything about it. And the FDA has been tiptoeing around, you know, making environmental contaminant a reason why you can go onto a farm. But there's a bill now that has been put forward by Rosa DeLauro in the House and Senator Booker in the Senate that would actually allow for investigators to go on to these properties to determine what the source of the outbreak was.
Bill, I mentioned at the outset that documentary Poisoned that you were featured in. I can't remember if you said it or someone else, but somebody described the food safety system as a game of whack-a-mole in many ways. Okay, burger, we'll fix that. Lettuce, we'll tackle that. Lead now and cinnamon, we'll tackle that. Talk about the philosophy you'd like to see instead of that reactive approach.
Yeah, I mean, the Food Safety Modernization Act, which was passed in 2010, signed by President Obama, really tried to kind of deal with making food safety much more proactive, to push more responsibility onto manufacturers, importers, the supply chain, to really step up and, you know, make sure that the food that we're getting is safe. There's just continues to be gaps. And I think whack-a-mole is the right way to say it. I think that was my friend Darren Detweiler, who lost his child in the Jack in the Box case, that said that. But we really just need to do a better job of sort of dealing with these environmental contaminants and how to deal with, you know, land use issues of where you're growing, you know, ready to eat products like lettuce and, you know, spinach, and how close that can be to a cattle feedlot or cattle operations. We know that a lot of pathogens like Salmonella, E. coli, come from cattle, and we need to deal with that, and it's been a problem. We also know that Salmonella is a constant problem with chicken, but the USDA has not banned Salmonella from chicken like they banned E. coli from hamburgers. So there continues to be gaps in the system. We do have this tendency to, when there's a disaster, we do something and then we kind of, you know, fall back to paying little attention to it.
Bill, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Take care. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. That's Bill Marler, longtime food safety advocate, managing partner of Marler Clark. That's a law firm that specializes in foodborne illness cases. We've been talking about food safety in the U.S., why it's important to address gaps in the system after lead was found in cinnamon products, including cinnamon applesauce marketing to kids over the last year. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.